podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard it made me cry.
Hello and welcome to the Run Run Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is Chris, your host, and whenever and wherever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in today. Are you ready to have some fun? Come on, let's go for a run. All right, folks, hello, this is Chris, and welcome to episode 33 of the Run, Run, Live podcast. I got a coup for you today. I got Bart Yasso on the phone this morning and interviewed him. He's a funny guy. He got a book out, so he's doing his book tour. I'm part of the book tour now, so it's been a good week, man. I got still sore in a race yesterday, and really still sore from that ultra marathon. I hope it doesn't take much longer to heal. I want to get out and start running again. I mean, racing again. So I signed up for the Manchester, New Hampshire Marathon. I'll try to get Sarah, the race director, on the phone before the week's over. And I also got a lot of good stuff going on, man. Let's just get to it, all right? I hope you enjoy the show.
All right, Buddy and I are going for a run into the woods. Man, I just had to sit in traffic for like a half an hour. And he's all stoked up. It's about 5. Ooh, I gotta get going. Sun's going down. I'll try to take some pictures of some things on my loop and sort of blog it up. Bye. Well, 6:45 and it's dark out. Went out for a run with the dog, and when I got about half mile away, couldn't see a darn thing. It's tough in the woods right now because the trails are covered with leaves, so you can't really differentiate where the trail is from where the rest of the woods are. I kept running off the trail, fell down, sprained my ankle a little bit. It wasn't fun. It was really fun because it's beautiful out. Took some pictures before it got dark. I'll see if I can get those up on my website at runrunloop.com. I'll Twitter pick them out too. Twitter pick. That's what twit pick when you send them out over Twitter. And Twitter's kind of cool. I am CYKTRussell at Twitter.com. You know, it's been a rough week, man. It's just, I'm surrounded by negativity. What's with all you people? It gets a little rough and you start giving up, jumping off of buildings. My God, cheer up. Got my, you know, dig deep, guys. Now's not the time. Just because we got all this election brouhaha and all this world coming to an end, financial crisis stuff, just choose not to participate. Now's the time to dig deep. Feel good about yourself. Jeez, I'm sick of mopey people. All right? Doesn't matter. They can't kill you. They can't take it away from you. You can choose to be happy. You can choose to be depressed. And people are just driving me nuts. So anyhow, rant over. Flame off. Got my signed Bart Yasso book today. Oh, with Kathleen Parrish, it says here. He has a great title. His title is Chief Running Officer for Runner's World. That's the job I want. That's the title I want. So anyhow, I got the signed copy. I sent him. I'm on his Facebook, so I sent him a note and said I wanted a signed copy. He sent me a signed copy. It says, Chris, a marathon is like life. - It's not how long it is, but how good it is what matters. Bart Yasso. So he said he'd come on my podcast, so I'm going to try and get him. I'm stretching out now. Me and Buddy were running, Buddy and I were running last night, not last night, the night before in the woods when it was dark, and it was a full moon, and we were running up the hill over by the radio tower, and there was a pack of coyotes in the woods next to us howling at the moon, and they don't howl like dogs. They make this weird sound like those, you know, wild dogs from Africa there. They go like, it's really spooky with the full moon and all the Halloween stuff. So I'm all alone tonight. It's Friday night. I'm all alone. Wife's in New York City doing something. I don't know what she's doing. And both kids are out with their friends. So this is it. I'm an empty nester. Just me and the Wonder Dog. So I'm going to read this book, man. That's what I'm going to do. And I'll tell you all about it, and hopefully I can get to talk to Bart. I asked him if I could. I got his cell phone number. I'm going to call him, because I can do that. Because I refuse to give up. I refuse to take it lying down. You're going to have to pry my running shoes from my cold, dead feet. All right? We'll see you out there.
And now for the equipment check.
Hey, well, if you've been listening to my podcast long enough, you know that I probably don't know all that much about shoes, but I know it works for me. So anyhow, I got an interesting question from my friend Jenny, who asked me about shoes. People are always asking me about shoes. So, you know, how do you know what kind of shoes to get? And you hear people say pronate and exonate and wear patterns and stuff like that. It's a couple of good ways to figure it out, at least give you more information. You know, there's no solution. Shoes are very personal. You just got to try them and see what works for you. One of the things is if you're wearing shoes that are bad for you, something's going to start hurt. Hips, knees, you know, something will start hurting. So it'll be pretty obvious. So if you get a new pair of shoes and you start getting some pain that you never had before, it's pretty obvious what the pain's from, so then you switch. But if you look at your shoes, if you put your shoes down on the floor like you were standing in them but not standing in them, and if get an old pair of shoes, an old pair of running shoes, not walking shoes but running shoes, and put them down on the floor as if you were running in them, face, you know, right up against each other as if you were standing in them, if they lean towards each other, that's pronation. If they lean away from each other, that's exonation. And the amount of the lean tells you how severe that condition is. And then you can look at the bottom and see the wear pattern, see which side of the sole is worn or not, right? And that'll tell you what your foot strike roll is. You can also tell whether you're a heel striker or not by looking to see if that back of the heel has a big wear patch on it or where the big wear patch on it is from your landing. And that'll tell you where you land. The other thing you can do is, and they tell you to do this if you go into any of the shoe sites, is you take a big piece of that butcher paper or any kind of long paper on a roll, or you can just do it on a cement or a piece of wood, but you get a pan of water and you put your feet in the water and then you run across a blank surface like a piece of paper or a wood floor or anything like that where it's going to make footprints, and look at the footprints and you can see whether you're flat-footed or not and how you strike by the shape of the footprint, right? So do that, take a picture of it, take it to the store with you, and then you'll know. They'll be able to help you, all right? So that's it. That's everything I know about shoes, I promise. Bye.
And now for our featured interview.
There we go. All right, we're good to go. So you're calling me from beautiful Emmaus, Pennsylvania?
I'm calling you from my office in beautiful, chilly Emmaus, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it was cold this morning, wasn't it?
Yeah, we got a little frost this morning, but it's that time of the year.
Yeah, I'm up in Massachusetts, and we did too.
Yeah.
It's been cold in the house, and my wife does this thing where she resists turning the heat on. It's like a test of wills between her and the season change, you know?
Gotcha. My wife's the exact opposite. She spent 40 years in California, so she cranks the heat up the first cool night in August. She goes crazy with it.
Awesome. So I got your book on Friday.
Oh, cool.
And I've managed to power through some of it. I'm sampling stuff. It's a lot like McGilvery's book in that it's a lot of short vignettes about cool places and cool things that you've run.
You got it, man. Yeah, it starts out telling the story how I ended up where I am, and then the little vignettes on cool races I've been able to do all around the world.
Yep.
And getting the little serious stuff on training, and then I finish with races I suggest people do in their running life.
Yeah, well, I looked through that list, and I've done one of them. I did Mount Washington this year.
Oh, man, that's a classic race.
Yeah, and it is, and you must know Dunham and all the hill running guys since you're on the hill running team.
Yeah, they're studs, total studs.
Yeah, those guys are nuts. But so you're not running anymore? You just run a little bit?
I just run a little bit. My Lyme disease really, messed up a lot of my lower extremities, mostly on my right side. My left leg feels like I could run a marathon a weekend. My right leg doesn't feel that way. So I did run 2.5 miles yesterday, felt pretty good, and that was a joy for me. So if I can get out every once, you know, I try to at least run once a week. Actually, yesterday was the first run I'd done in 5 weeks. My leg's really been bothering bothering me, but I got out there, and it was a real joy. I picked those perfect days and run, go to the park, pretty setting, you know, get in what I can and just enjoy it.
Yeah, I've been thinking about doing a whole podcast on Lyme disease because I know so many people who have gotten it over the last couple of years.
Yeah, you know, if you can catch it early and get medicated early, get on the antibiotics, there's a good chance you, you know, you can get rid of it and it won't really affect you that badly. I had it enter my neurological system and was out of the country when I got really ill. I contracted
right.
it in the U.S., but I was in Africa.
Right, you're on
sick, so I got pretty messed up.
Yeah, you were on Kilimanjaro when it hit you.
I was on Kilimanjaro when I got really sick, and then I ended up in a hospital in Moshi, Tanzania, and then I ended up in the hospital in Nairobi and Kenya, and then I ended up coming home to get actually diagnosed. They couldn't figure out what was wrong with me in Africa. They kept saying, "We know what's happening. We understand your neurological system is this paralysis." I had paralysis in my face, and but they just couldn't understand what was causing it. And they don't have Lyme disease on the continent of Africa. So, but the one thing the doctor said to me in Nairobi, he said, "Whatever you contracted, it's not anything from Africa, because we did every test possible, everything on this continent." And you know, and that's when they suggested to go to the States and try to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, when I used to travel overseas, that basically the standard, you know, worker kit was a course of penicillin and a plane ticket home.
Yeah, yeah. So that's after 5 days in these hospitals, I ended up coming home, which, you know, and then I got diagnosed when I got back to the States.
Yeah, I mean, the people, it's weird because I want to help people understand, you know, what the symptoms are. And some people don't get the bullseye rash. Some people just feel crappy, you know. What were your indications? And you've had it two times, right?
I just started feeling crappy, but then I broke out in the rash and did get the bullseye, but I didn't get it right away. And I still didn't, once I got the rash, I still didn't know what it was. I thought, you know, spider bite or something.
Yeah.
I just wasn't thinking Lyme disease.
Yeah, well, coming from where you are in Pennsylvania, there's more deer than people there.
Yeah, this is a high area for Lyme, unfortunately. You know, first you have to have the tick, then you have to have the tick infected with Lyme. So that's you can find out how infected your area is, and then you got to be careful.
And people
think that the ticks are only in real secluded wooded areas, which is not true. The ticks love high grass and in parks and backyards and stuff like that. So.
Right,
you can get it by just strolling in your backyard, or your cat can get it by, or your dog can get it by strolling in your backyard and bring it in your house. You can get it just sitting around watching TV, petting your dog or cat. So it's not just being cautious when you're out running in trails and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. It's the high grass or the because what they do is they climb up the grass stems and they sort of hang out with grappling hooks. They have arms like grappling hooks and they wait for them to run by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a debilitating disease if it really, if it's not treated early and enter your neurological system, it can really mess you up.
Yeah, because I was looking at your calendar and you said, and you know, your calendar says Chicago, Marine Corps. I'm like, oh, he's doing a lot of marathons. But you're not. You're working the booth.
Yeah, I'm working, doing book sales and, you know, doing my Runner's World stuff, speaking at pasta dinners, putting on seminars. The only time I really work the booth is Runner's World. We only do a big show at Chicago, New York, and Boston.
Right.
The rest of these I'll be doing book sales. And the Marine Corps Marathon this coming weekend, they're doing what they call an expert bar. And so all the runners can come up, and they have a different expert there every hour, and you can come up and ask questions, you know, about Sunday's race, get some advice. And I'm one of the experts at the expert bar, which I thought was a cool idea. It's kind of replacing the usual seminars that we're used to, knowing that people can't always get there at the time of the seminars, and this will be continuous throughout the expo.
It's interesting. More like a panel of experts.
Yes, that is. Yeah, and you can. Sometimes there will be one person there. Sometimes there will be three people. So you p- pick the expert you're familiar with and go up and get your advice, ask your questions. I think it's a pretty good idea.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good. So you're going to be down at Marine Corps?
I will be at Marine Corps and then New York and then Big Sur Half Marathon and then Rock and Roll San Antonio. And it just goes on and on and on.
And
filling marathon. I'll take a break at right before Christmas.
Yeah, but you like traveling. You've been the traveling guy for Running's World forever.
I love travel, and, you know, I do it just to meet the people and meet the runners. So the one thing I can still do is help out people. I can't run as fast as I used to or as far as I used to, but I can still help out runners. So that's where I'm concentrating my efforts.
Yep. And speaking of helping out, you're one of the few people I know who's had had a workout named after him. You know,
yeah.
By your friend Ambie Burfoot.
How about it? Yeah. My friend Ambie Burfoot sits right next to me. His office is right next door. He was the one that coined Yasso 800s. It was actually something I found in my training logs where this correlation existed for some crazy reason before my first marathon, which dates back to 1981.
Yeah.
I did 10 800 meters with a 400 meter recovery.
Yeah.
And the time I averaged in those 800s was the exact time I ran in the marathon. And then I got faster as I ran more marathons. But as I would, before I would run a marathon, I always remember that workout, the 10 800 meters. And it always, I felt it was a good workout, so I kept doing it. And that correlation was there, the 800s and the marathon were the exact same time, only the 800 meter repeats were in minutes and seconds, and of course the marathon in hours and minutes. But that magical correlation was there. When I told Ambie about it, he went crazy. He thought it's the greatest thing. Wanted to put it in the magazine, and I was kind of leery because I said, I know it works for me and a few people I help with coaching, but I didn't know it worked for all abilities and, you know, across the board. But he
does
said,
it-
He said, I'll take the heat. I'll put my name to the story. And then, of course, he named them Yasso 800s without me knowing it. So,
does it scale down to, you know, the five-hour marathoners?
I hear from people anywhere from 2 hours. Fastest person I heard that used it, a guy ran 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Hmm.
And, you know, these are personally people have came up to talk to me and say, you know, they trained using Yasso 800s. And then all the way back to about 5 hours, people, it worked for them.
Yeah, because I'm a, like, you know, three-hour mid-packer, and it lines up perfect. It's not like, and again, it's funny. It's like you said, it's not like you tried to do it. It's just you look at your workouts and look at your finish time, and it lines up.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not based on scientific data, and that I tell people in the book. This is just a correlation that I found. I used it as a barometer. You know, you still have to do other, I still did other track workouts like mile repeats and stuff
right.
like that. And, you know, long run is essential in your marathon pace workouts. But Yasso 800 works for a lot of people.
I think it keeps it simple because I did the same thing when I first started training for trying to qualify for Boston, and except I did it with miles.
Right.
So, you know, it's about the same range, though. You know, if you look at your 800 split, you know, if you stretch that out to a mile, it's about the same.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
Just do less of them. You don't do 10.
Yeah, there, you got that right. Yeah, if you're doing mile repeats, you should do 5 in that key buildup as you're, you know, getting ready for the marathon.
Right, so if you need that 3:10 marathon to qualify for Boston, you got to go out, you got to work up to, and now, in terms of, is this speed or tempo? I'm thinking, like, tempo, like fast tempo.
Well, actually, if someone's going to try to, say someone's trying to qualify for Boston 3:10 and they're now like a 3:20 marathoner, it would actually be a speed workout to get out there and run 10 800 meters in 3 minutes and 10 seconds. I would consider that speed for the most people.
Yeah, it would be.
And
yeah,
then,
it would be.
And then I believe, you know, then you do your marathon pace workouts, those, you know, you do anywhere from 8 to 10 miles at marathon pace. And
which
of course, that long run. And if you match the three of them up, you're getting the endurance from the long run, you're training your body to know that per mile pace by doing that marathon pace workout.
Absolutely.
And then Yasso 800s or you know, some mile repeats, then you're getting that faster turnover.
Right, and you're not and you're not stepping into week one doing 10 800.
No, you would want to start out doing 4 or 5 and then build up.
Yeah, I was looking at your plan, and it's pretty standard in terms of like three week waves.
Yeah,
going up through it, so you work up to it. But I like the 800s better because the miles were really took a lot of effort on my part.
Yeah, and miles are, you know, the 800 is still fast enough where you get some speed out of it, long enough that you get the endurance. The mile repeats are really more of an endurance workout than an actual speed workout. But it's still a great workout. Mile repeats are a great thing to do for marathoners.
Yep. Hey, so what's your favorite piece out of your book here?
You know, it's hard to say. I go off of the feedback I get from runners that have read it.
All right, I'll make it easier. What's the most talked about?
Most talked about is the nude race by far.
I was going to say that.
Time, by far, they thought the whole chapter was hysterical, and they're all intrigued by it, and that by far is the question I get all the time. And people walk up to me, you know, Chicago Marathon, people everywhere, runners everywhere, and this woman walks by and goes, "Hey, there's the guy who ran naked right there," and they point at me. And, you know, I get that all the time. And then after that would be, of course, Badwater. People
right.
are always intrigued about running 146 miles through Death Valley in the month of July and 125-degree temperatures. Us runners are very aware of temperatures and weather and what's going on around us. So it's people are intrigued at, you know, how do you run in crazy temperatures like that. And, of course, Badwater, when I did it back in 1989, no one knew about the race.
Right.
There wasn't much publicity.
Yeah, it was like it was like 40 people, right? Or
when I did it, there were 6 people.
6 people, right. I remember reading that in Runner's World.
5 other crazy runners. And then, you know, the year after, well, we did the big story called Badwater Bart in Runner's World, and then the race just took off.
Right.
At a whole another level. And then it got a lot of publicity through some of the cable shows like MSNBC, Dateline, and shows like that. They
yeah.
like sensationalism of these runners out there looking like they're going to die any minute and just fall apart. So now the race hit a whole new level. Now you get like 90 runners and a waiting list, and you have to qualify and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I just did my first ultra a couple of weeks ago at Vermont.
Oh, the Vermont 50 or the Vermont 100?
The 50.
The 50. Oh, yeah. Classic race.
Yeah, beautiful race.
Yeah.
I'm still recovering, though. I did a 10-mile trail run yesterday, you know, pretty technical. And my quads are still cooked.
Yeah.
It's like somebody stole my quads and replaced them with the quads of an 80-year-old guy.
Yeah. Wait till you do a 100-mile race. Then you're really going to find out that your quads are shot for, it seems like, forever.
Yeah.
Eventually you start to feel better. But 50 miles is actually harder than 100 miles. I know that doesn't sound like it makes sense, but it really is, because 50 miles you can still run at a faster pace.
Once
you get up to 100 miles, for the average person, there's a lot more walking involved, and you can't run at a pace that you really hurt yourself.
Right.
So it's really more of a pacing game. 50 miles you can still lay it on the line and still go pretty hard. And you know, I remember last 50 mile race I did, I was. It took me 3 months till I felt like I could run normally again.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to that because I'm struggling with whether I should sign up for a marathon this fall, because I don't want to get out to, you know, the 17 mile mark and have my quads not working.
Yeah, I don't know. See how you feel. You know.
Yeah, you can always dial it back.
Go easy for a little bit and do maybe pick one of those races which is just a great race to do where it's really not about running fast or.
Yeah. I don't run fast anymore anyhow.
There you go. I mean, I tell people that all the time. You know, there's some races you go to run fast, and then there's some you just go to have a great time, finish, and you know, take pictures, enjoy the whole experience.
Exactly. Hey, so I love that scene in that story about the Badwater where you come up on the banana muffins.
Yeah, banana bread on the side of the road, which was...
Yes.
Tom Posser, who was a very, very accomplished ultra runner, and he was eating bananas out there and they weren't agreeing with him. So he was throwing up, at probably, I believe it was right around the 61-mile mark, which is at the end of a 17-mile uphill.
Right, and since
he was struggling, and you know, the blacktop, when the air temperature is 120 degrees, the blacktop's about 160 degrees that you're sitting on. And here's this guy running, throwing up bananas, and it would hit the blacktop and literally just bake.
Like a
clump of baked banana bread, which is not that appealing. But you know what? When you're out there looking for anything to take your mind off of 146 miles in the heat, you just, you know, I just remember seeing clumps of bananas thinking, you know, someone came out here and put banana bread down on the side of the road and then left. You know, who would do that? It just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean,
we finally realized what it was because we came up to Pastor and he was throwing up as we caught up behind him.
Yeah, I mean, when you get out on the ultras, one of the cool things about ultras is all this surreal stuff starts happening.
Yeah, and the ultra world's a fun world. People are really much more friendly. It's a smaller running community.
Yeah,
so you get to know more of the people, and a real friendly group. And my wife is still very, very active in the ultra community, still doing 100-mile races, and she just loved the vibe. I mean, she just, you know, she went out to Western States 100-miler this year, even though it was canceled, just to hang out with the people and have fun.
Yeah,
they had to cancel the race due to wildfires, but she still went out and, you know, enjoyed the weekend and hung out with her ultra friends and just had a blast.
They are. They're the most laid-back people in the world.
Yeah.
It's amazing how easygoing everybody is, considering what they're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that's what attracts them to it. And then there are some great, great ultra runners we have right now. I mean, Karnassus is amazing, Dean Karnassus. And Scott Jurek is just unbelievable. This guy, won Western States 7 times, goes over and wins the Spartathon in Athens, or in Greece outside of Athens. Spartathon's like 153 miles.
Yikes.
On trail, there's one part where they climb about 4,000 feet, and he can average just under 9-minute pace per mile for 153 miles.
That's amazing.
Unbelievable.
And that's with the hills and everything, too, so.
That's It's incredible. Hills, trails, and he still can average a 9-minute pace for 153 miles.
Yeah.
That is mind-boggling to me.
That's amazing. So, a lot of good...
Of course, Jurek won Badwater. Dean won Badwater. Pam Reed, you know, is another one. She actually, Pam has won Badwater outright, beat the guys a couple times. She was the first overall finisher.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
She's quite the animal.
Yeah,
she comes around with my wife every once in a while to races.
Yeah, I mean, I like it also at the ultra because as you get older, you can still do them if you take care of yourself because it's lower impact and, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not racing them like the leaders are.
Yeah, lower impact. They almost all of them are on trails, which is easier on your body, and you don't have to run the entire distance. It's
right.
Really encouraged to walk on the uphills and, you know.
Exactly.
Scenery, and that makes it more doable.
Hey, so when you go out to do Comrades, I'm in.
Yeah, Comrades is my dream. I don't know how I'm physically going to be able to do it on the little bit of running I can do, but it is really my dream race. I was entered in it twice, and the one time I got very ill with Lyme disease and couldn't go, and there was another time I was entered and there was a conflict and I just couldn't get there. So, unfortunately, it was a race that I always wanted to do. I never had the chance. So I have to try to figure out a way to get my body to train hard enough, just cross-training, do whatever I can do to get fit enough that I can go over there and just kind of walk, run the thing and get under that magical 11 hours before they close down the chutes. And they don't let you finish, actually, after 11 hours. They turn you away, so I'd have to get under that 11-hour mark.
And that's not easy on 56 miles.
No, it's pretty rugged. You know, they do the up year and the down year. It doesn't matter which way you go, up or down. It's still a tough course, and 56 miles is still 56 miles.
Yeah.
I actually did run 50 miles in 6 hours and 11 minutes back in 1990.
Back in the day.
Back in the day, but I can't do anything like that now. So
yeah, but
it'll be a serious challenge if I could break 11 hours. I'll have to.
Yeah, because that would be sub 10s.
Yeah, that's going to be hard to do. But
yeah.
I'm willing to give it a shot if I can. My body will respond where I can get in some type of training, some cross training where I could actually feel like I could do it. And I think I'm going to just do a lot of power walking and do that on trails, and then see how it goes.
Yep.
And I'm thinking I'd love to do it in 2009.
Well, there you go. Keep me on your mailing list. I'll go with you.
Yeah. I'm telling you, Chris, it's like. Talk to people who have done every race. You know, I've traveled the globe. Everyone comes back to Comrades as probably the greatest one-day running event anywhere in the world.
Yep, and this is in South Africa, for people who don't know.
Yeah, it runs Comrades. It's an old race. It's the oldest ultra and the largest ultra in the world. And you can't imagine that 15,000 to 16,000 people line up at the start running. Ready to run 56 miles.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
It started in 1914, some guy in World War One, some British guy.
And now it's, it's just tradition. And
all right.
Run very fast on the course. Of course, Alberto Salazar won it 1 year, which was a big deal. It's just a classic race. And that gentleman you talked about earlier, Ambi Burfoot, he's done it twice.
Yeah.
And, Ambi won the Boston Marathon, has run all over the world, covered the Olympics, and he still says it's the greatest running event ever.
Yep, it's good. People are running longer now, so I hope you'll be able to put your body back together and get back on the trails.
Yeah, that's my goal, Chris.
I'm sure all the technology you guys have down there and at Rodale, you'll be able to work something out.
Yeah, I hope so.
So people want your book, where do they go to get it?
You can get it on Amazon and certainly in all the bookstores. You can go to bartyasso.com. If you need it personalized, then bartyasso.com would be the place, because then I receive those emails and I can put a message in there to people. Amazon, certainly has it. It's been on sale. Amazon puts it on sale way before you finish writing the book. Those guys are amazing.
Yeah, they are. They're efficient.
And then if you go to bartyasso.com, my schedule is there where I'll be at expos doing book signings and stuff like that. So,
all right, my friend.
If people want it, there's ways to get it. And it's an unusual running book. It's meant, there is a lot of humor in it. So if you like reading fun stuff, it really tells a story, then check it out, called My Life on the Run.
All right, man.
All right, Chris, thank you so much.
It was a pleasure talking to you, my friend.
My pleasure, buddy. Take
care. All right. Bye-bye.
This is Chris at the 7 Mile Water Stop, 7.5. We got the lead runners coming in. Who we got?
All right, we got our first two runners.
Two.
Matt's out here from Warwick.
1881. Let's go, Matt! Nice work, guys! Nice work!
Yeah. Here's your Vermont Marathon winner, Matt Shelton.
This is New Brunswick. And Francisco from Marion, Mass.
Smooth.
Hey, nice work, Jerry!
Lock it in. That's it. Lock it in.
Hey, this is Chris. Had a good day. Got up early this morning, went and volunteered at the water stop at Bay State. Did that till about 10 o'clock, till the first wave went through. Saw Steve Runner. He looked pretty strong. AC ran pretty well today. He looked fairly happy. Had his Red Sox gear on for good luck. And I jumped in the car, me and a couple other folks, and came over here to the Groton-Town Forest Trail Race. Ran that. Didn't feel real strong. I'm still suffering from my my 50 miler. I mean, I finished and it was fun and everything, but my quads were burning. I mean, really burning. I mean, one of the things, I'm a big guy, one of the things that has always been sort of my forte is my strength, and my strength in my quads and my strength in my legs, because I'm not fast, but I'm strong. And and I'm rugged, you know, solidly built. But my quads feel like I was doing uphill wind sprints all day yesterday. It's like I just finished doing, you know, just finished doing 250 jumping jacks. That's what my quads feel like. And so 3 miles in, I went out hot, and then 3 miles in, I was like, oh my God, I can't move my legs. So I had to dial it down and relax a little bit. Then it gets easy, then it gets hilly, then it gets easy. After like the 3 mile mark, I let my pack go. I didn't see anybody for the last 6 miles of the race. I finished up, you know, maybe just around 8 minute miles or a little faster. But what can you do? Getting old. All right, I got to go work on my truck some more. We replaced the rear universal joints last night. That seemed, they needed to be replaced, but it, for some reason, didn't help. And walking back to my truck now. Then I went up and got 4 new tires, so I thought it might be the tires, because they were down to the belts. You could see metal. But that helped too, but that still wasn't it. So something's still wrong in there. It's either going to be, still got that vibration going on. It's either going to be an engine mount, or the front universals. Because with the extended cab, it's got 2 drive shafts, which is kind of weird. There's 5 universals in there. Yeah, but the old man has a 80-ton hydraulic press. So this thing that you can, you know, make carbon into diamonds with the amount of pressure. And we use that to get the universals seated. So anyhow, enough about my old truck. They made it too hard for me to buy a new old truck, so I'm just fixing the old truck. So far, I'm up to about $600 with the tires. We'll see what happens. Talk to you soon. Oh, yeah, we're going to be talking to Bart Yasso tomorrow. That's pretty cool. My life is so cool. Hey, everybody, stay positive for goodness sake. Stay positive. Life is good. Don't sweat it. See ya.
Hey, this is Chris. I'm on my way to work here. I'm in my dad's Buick, and this is my father's Buick. The guy behind me is brushing his teeth in traffic. I've never seen that before. I've seen a lot of shaving, and I've seen some other disgusting things, but I've never seen anyone brushing their teeth while driving. I'm wondering about the mechanics of that. It must be a dry brush. What do you think?
Hey, this is Chris. That was fun. Episode 33, down to the wire and in the can. Hope you enjoyed it. Like I said, I'm running the Manchester, New Hampshire Marathon on the 2nd. Maybe you want to join me. That would be cool. And remember the tip for today, which is to choose to be joyful and ignore all the evilness that's going on around you here. Stick to your run, you know? Even if the world comes to an end, you can still run. You may have to run a lot, actually, from the flesh-eating cannibals and zombies, all right? So, we'll see you out there. Music is from the PodSafe Music Network, and this artist is called Sherby. It's a young woman from California. You should go out and buy her songs there, give her some money. I like this one. It's very melodic and happy. I like melodic and happy. It's called Liquid Joy. Joy, joy, joy. That's my theme for today, all right? Have some joy. Go hug somebody.
Now, the kind that goes with the dark red room. I got people running, loving.
for listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show, or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line, and I will see you out there.
Run, Run, Live, the podcast for all your running needs.